Thank you, Doug. There's a lot of great things to consider there. This is a question that goes back to the checkbook analogy.
Okay.
And who determines the value of the deposits here? The father may value one sacrifice more than the daughter. How would you understand that or respond to that?
Okay. The value of the deposits would be what happens that enables the check to clear. So if the father gave, what matters is not whether the father gave up $10,000. The issue is whether it made it into the bank, right? So if he went down there and deposited at night and he missed the slot, if he gave it up, he lost it. It was a cash deposit, but it didn't go in the slot. So you, when you're bringing up your kids, you want to make sure that the love you're showing is registering. It's got to make it there. You have to know that you have a good relationship with your, you have to know that you have a good relationship with your daughter, and you can't do that by guessing. It's got to be face to face, eye to eye, relationship. Those of you, my kids all have a marvelous sense of humor, but one time when Becca was, I remember one time she, at the dinner table, said she asked me for 3 months so that she could go up in the mountain and bewail her virginity, and like Jephthah's daughter, and she said there's no guys. You know, now in Moscow, we've got New Standards College, and the place is teeming with guys, teeming with girls. But when Becca was the entering class of NSA, and there was four students, and she was the only girl, and none of the guys were, in the categories that she was interested in, and she just there's no guys, and I was able to know. I knew exactly what she was talking about. She had talked about this with her mom and with me, and I basically knew where we were. So it's not guesswork. It's relationship. It's dad time. It's not how much, you know, dad might have given up a job opportunity in a high-flying firm on the other side of the country that his daughter doesn't even know about. Dad knows about it. What she knows about is how often he took her to lunch, or how often he had a conversation with her, how often, you know, that's where the transaction has to be.
Okay. Let's see. Well, on first one here, what do you do if, I think this is a good one, what do you do if the daughter does not agree with the father on a point of doctrine? For example, if the daughter is a Credo Baptist and the father is a Paedo Baptist, how would a father deal with that without bouncing checks? So say a Baptist guy comes along and she's persuaded of that, and the father isn't. How does he deal with that without?
This is going to sound cold, but I believe that dad had his shot. If his daughter is of marriageable age, and she has a different set of doctrinal convictions than her dad does, then he should reckon that to his account, not hers. Something happened there, but he should not then put his foot down. So if she's a Baptist and she meets a godly young Baptist man, I would say parents ought to bless that. You know, if everything else being equal, if the guy's a good guy, and the only thing is that he doesn't agree with the father's doctrinal position, I would say the father had his chance to teach, and he shouldn't be chasing her down the street of her life, asking for a second, third, fourth, fifth chance.
Another checkbook question here. You talked about how the role of the parents of the young man would be more in the realm of advice or counsel. This question, could there ever be a no on the part of the parents to the young man if they think it's really a bad fit in some respect or something? Should it be stronger than counsel?
The no, here's how it works. If the son is not asking the parents, the son is not asking his parents to make a decision for him. The son is seeking counsel and advice. And if it's an egregious mistake that the son is making, the parents should say, son, you've heard our counsel, you've heard our advice, and we think this is a bad, bad mistake. And then there's a range of bad mistakes. There are the bad mistakes where you're just sort of prepared for the explosion. Then there's the bad mistake where you couldn't, in good conscience, go to the wedding. Right? Because to be present at the wedding is to get, let's say the son wants to marry a non-Christian. Well, I'm not saying no to you. God's word says no to you. Right? And I can't bless something that God's not blessing. But even there, I think parents should parents of a son should couch it in terms of, here's our advice. We can't bless it, or we can't bless it enthusiastically. We'll be there, but we won't be dancing all night long, or we can't be there. But even there, once the marriage is formed, once the bad idea marriage is contracted, the parents should say, we want you to know that we're going to be there the day after, and we will do everything in our power to make it work. You've heard all our counsel and all our advice, but once you're married, we're on your side.
Okay. Another one here. How should a young man act around young women, and maybe even more particularly, because that could be a whole 3 hours.
He should barge into furniture and howl at the moon.
But even more than that, especially young men who are not not anywhere old enough or in the station of life to even begin pursuing courtship.
Paul tells Timothy in 1 Timothy 5, treat the younger women as sisters with absolute purity. And I would say that's the way a young man who's not in a position to marry yet should at church be attentive to the girls, but not singling any of them out. He should be warm, friendly, and distant, warm and friendly and as a brother, but not trying to pursue a close relationship with any of them, because too many young men are like a dog chasing a fire truck. They don't know what to do if they catch it. Right. So if a young man, if he's 17 and he's starting to show interest in Susie Q, and then she stops and says, okay, and he caught her, and he's not ready to catch her. So basically, treat the younger women as sisters with absolute purity, and I think mom and dad should help him keep an eye out. Hey, you're being friendly, but you're starting to settle in certain, settle down on one or two, and watch yourself there. I think it should be, I think everybody, when the girls are saying, do you think so-and-so likes, maybe, I don't know. Who can tell? Yeah, I think it should be like that.
A couple of questions sort of along this line. What sort of things are most important for a father to consider in evaluating a young man who shows interest in his daughter? You talked about like-mindedness and doctrinal things and that sort of that. And then another question. How should a father speak to or treat a young man? How detailed or long should the dad courting be prolonged?
Okay. The one thing, in addition to the things I said, were basic Christian commitment, godly young man, like-mindedness, issues like that. The only thing I would add to that list would be work ethic. I would say that a father should want to know that this is a man who can work like he needs to work like crazy. And he has to, I forget, it was our son-in-law, Luke, before he was engaged to Rachel, he was a house painter. And it was either right after he was engaged or right before we hired him to paint our house. And he he painted our entire, we got a big house, and he painted the whole thing by himself with a roller and brush in 3 days. And I've never seen anything like it. And it's like, whoa, this is pretty, got my attention. In addition to that, on my blog, if you go, in the search bar on my blog, I've got a post, 21 questions to ask a prospective suitor, something like that. It's got 21 questions and suitor or something like that. And there are 21 questions that I recommend that a father get into. And I think you need to, and I think one of the questions is, how deep do you go in sexual history, things like that. And I think that those are not off limits. I think they should be asked, but not because you have a tawdry interest in them, but rather you want to simply ascertain, is this guy going to be good for my daughter, or is he toxic for my daughter, right? So it's not to say if you ask about, porn addiction or something like that. In my experience as a pastor, there are many, many young Christian men struggle sometimes off and on with porn problems. And if dad says, if that's ever been a problem, period, then he's out for my daughter. But the problem with that is that there's a certain sense in which that problem demonstrates that this guy needs to be married, right? And so that kind of guy is the kind of guy who, when he struggles off and on with this sort of thing, and then he gets married, in 90% of the cases, that solves that. It addresses that problem. God's solution to sexual temptation is sex, Paul says in Corinthians. So that's the solution. It should be known, and this is what the dad should really be interested in, is that there's a certain group of men for whom porn use is a function not of a biological appetite that they have self-control problems with, but is rather a function of despising women, having deep insecurity issues, other issues, and there's a small handful of men with porn problems, and marriage doesn't address it because it's not really about sex. It's about insecurity and other things. And that's the thing that dad wants to be on the lookout for, not as much the other. But I have those questions.
Okay. What do you think about how do we apply apply biblical courtship with regard to online dating or not necessarily dating, but meeting people online or at a distance, whether it's through email or whatever. How do we apply it that way? How would a father deal with that?
I would say a father's involvement should be active and engaged and extra wary. So as a pastor, I know of some outstanding successes when it comes to distance introductions or online dating services. I know of some really, really happy stories. I also know of some grade A disasters. I would say extra caution, extra time, extra care. Also, I think, but as time goes on, as online connections become more and more ordinary, if I might put it that way, I think our people are getting more and more savvy about what an online presence is or isn't. They're not as easily persuaded by a profile or, that sort of thing. So I would say it's a good thing, but extra caution, be extra careful.
Yeah, I've got a few more. I think you might have addressed this a little bit, but maybe more particularly, this maybe is more on the horror story side of courtship things, but some young men really get put through the grinder, and fathers will be pretty unreasonable with them, maybe have them pass a doctrinal exam to be able to marry their daughter and have hours and hours of interviews with the son and ask everything. what do you do with fathers that just have these extremely high and possibly unreasonable standards for their daughters? What would you say to, if you saw that, you know, in your church, what would you do?
I would say, number one, Jacob was willing to work for an unreasonable Laban, and it was unreasonable, but that's what he wanted to do. But it would depend for me on how unreasonable it was. If Dad's just being, on the strict end, 11 out of a scale of 10, then I might give counsel. You know, might want to lighten up. That's that sort of thing. But if Dad is sort of on the lunatic end of things, I believe that no human authority is absolute. I don't believe that a husband's authority over his wife is absolute. I don't believe parents' authority over children is absolute. I don't believe a pastor and an elder have absolute authority over their congregation. And I don't believe that the civil magistrate has absolute authority over its citizens. Every human authority has boundaries and limits. And I do believe that there are times when beleaguered suitors could appeal to the elders of the church, for example, and ask for permission to disregard what our parents are saying. So I'll give you an example. And usually the tell would be the Laban tell, where Laban, well, he didn't do this with the courtship, but how Jacob says, Laban changed my wages 10 times. When you keep moving the goalposts, that's that sort of thing is where I think another authority can come in and say, no, quit messing with them. I knew this was a long-distance thing, but we were contacted by a young woman who was, her parents demanded that she be courted by a young man, required it of her, and she didn't want to at all, right? She didn't want to be with a guy, and her parents demanded it of her, required it of her. And so she allowed herself to be courted by the young man in question, and she got... she was courted, they got engaged, and after a time she fell for him. It was headed toward a happy ending, and a few weeks before the wedding her dad forbade her to marry him. Right? So it was like Dad said, you must go for him. She, against her desire, she did, and then she fell in love with him, and then for no good reason Dad put his foot down and says, I'm not going to allow this marriage to go forward. So she contacted us, and we said, ignore your dad. You need to let his yes be yes in this situation. You gave your word in this situation because of him. So that's an instance where the father is moving the goalposts, and that's the kind of thing where it's a tell that perhaps there needs to be an intervention from another authoritative voice.
Okay. So when the courtship is begins, what should everybody's attitude toward it be? Sometimes some people will announce they're courting and everyone treats it like the wedding is next week. But should it be treated with... maybe a kind of skepticism, or we'll see how it goes.
I would say happy skepticism.
Okay.
Right?
Yeah.
Because what happens is, oh, you're courting, and if everybody in the church treats it like a foregone conclusion, then what you're doing is you're not congratulating them, you're pressuring them. Mm-hmm. There's another important point here. When a young man takes the initiative to court a young woman, he should be 80% there. He should be a good ways there because he's had 2 years to think about it. He's been praying about it. He's been watching. He knows what he's thinking about doing. And so he takes the initiative. So he should be further down the road than she needs to be. Now, she might be right where he is. She might be ahead of where he is. Or she might be, I never thought about that. I never thought of you that way. I never thought you'd be interested. But now that you are, let me think about it. So she could be starting from a standing stop, right? And she needs time. She's being courted, which means that he is trying to persuade her of something, and she has every right to not be persuaded. So a courtship can start and end without any dishonor, right? When the courtship ends, it doesn't mean that it failed. It could be treated as a success, right? And you haven't settled anything. You haven't promised anything. You haven't committed anything. So when if someone said, hey, I just sent off my application to Harvard today. Oh, congratulations. Well, I'm not admitted yet. I'm not accepted. Yeah. I'm not accepted yet. So if you've applied to something, congratulations are not in order. And if 100 people congratulate him for applying to Harvard, all that's going to do is make him feel the pressure, feel pressure. So basically it should be a happy skepticism. Oh, that's fun. I hope, that's fun. I hope it works out. Or that's fun. I'll pray for you guys that God give you wisdom. That's the sort of response that ought to be had, not like it's in the bag.
Earlier we talked about, child rearing, raising children up in the worship, the nurture and admonition of the Lord, with regard to, single moms or divorced moms, widowed moms. What do you do in a situation like this where there's no dad? You probably have the mom have the authority, but what if there's no parental authority that wants to be in charge with courtship? What do you do there? And the young lady and the young man want to pursue this model, and there's nobody there that has been that is willing to write the check. Maybe they've put some deposits in, but
right.
Nobody's writing checks at all.
So basically, whatever you do is going to be makeshift after that point. So I would say you want to have the young lady would be asking, an older couple in the church, would you keep me balanced on this? Would you ask me some questions? The young man would be doing something similar. One of the things I do, one of the questions I ask with couples that are engaged to be married in my premarital counseling, one of my questions is, so is there anybody in your life who's asking nosy questions about how you're behaving sexually? And usually, 80% of the time, yeah, they're my dad, or yeah, we have people holding us accountable. And I'll say, good, then I won't. Right? But if there is nobody holding them accountable and they're navigating this all by themselves, then I would say, I'm your pastor. I'll say, how are you doing? Keeping your hands to yourself? How's it going? Let me, that sort of thing. So I think that that's a place where pastoral accountability or parish elder accountability can step in and provide a modicum of support. But there's no sin in a young couple getting together without oversight. You have to play with the cards, the hand that you're dealt. And if you don't have anybody, then just date and behave yourself.
Thank you so much, Doug.
Thank you.
Appreciate it.
Thank you.